You will be hearing in a few minutes a play by George Bernard Shaw, The Dark Lady of the Sonnets. But beforehand, that most eminent of dramatists, who is here in the studio in person, has a few words to say by way of preface. This is a Shavian preface that no one has yet read, because it's been specially written for this occasion. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. George Bernard Shaw.
This play, which you are going to hear, is all about Shakespeare and Queen Elizabeth. But it is really only an appeal for the old National Theatre, which we have been trying to make the English nation establish for 30 years past. Dame Edith Littleton invented the play in 1910. I wrote the dialogue, and we had a grand performance at the Haymarket Theatre with Mr. Granville Barker in the part of Shakespeare. But I'm not going to talk to you about the National Theatre. Shakespeare does this so eloquently in the play, and Queen Elizabeth is so up to date with her reply to dissipate them, I shall spoil their speeches for you. So let me tell you how far the play is historical. It takes place in the old royal palace of Whitehall, where Shakespeare often acted for the amusement of King James. We have Ben Jonson's word for it. He says that it was on banks of Thames that Shakespeare, Eliza, and our James. Now, I have my doubts about Eliza. She was a bit of a scholar, but she was a great out-of-doors woman, and when she was not taken up with her queen business, she liked riding, hunting, staying in country houses, dancing, flirting, and ordering the most magnificent dresses ever worn by mortal woman. There's no evidence that she took any interest in the theatre. A stage player was to her, at best, a nobleman's servant of much less importance to her than his cook, and at worst, a rogue and a vagabond. Still, a playwright whose works got printed had to be able to put his stage directions into good Latin, for in Eliza's time, playwrights were not so illiterate as they are today. Chapman and Ben Jonson would have died rather than write, "He exits, she exits, they exit," instead of the good Latin exit and exeunt. Even Shakespeare, who according to Ben Jonson had little Latin and less Greek, knew better than that. And so Queen Elizabeth, if she had ever heard of Shakespeare, would have allowed him a disreputable sort of middle-class professional rank. But my own belief is that she never did hear of him, and that the name Will Shakespeare meant absolutely nothing to her. When Dame Edith planned this play, we both thought that it was high time to introduce them to one another. And now, as there's nothing about either Will or Eliza in the title of the play, you may be wondering who on earth the Dark Lady was. Well, nobody knows. But there was a dark lady all the same. Shakespeare, in addition to his plays, wrote a batch of 154 sonnets, most of them addressed to a certain young man known as Mr. W.H., who was one of those very attractive people whom we call world's sweethearts. They are mostly film stars nowadays. They are adored equally by men and women because their attraction is one of beauty and charm and has nothing to do with sex. Shakespeare's sonnets to this young gentleman are far more affectionate and admiring than any that he would have addressed to a woman. And the proof of this is that the sonnets to Mr. W.H. are interrupted by some that were addressed to a woman with whom Shakespeare had fallen in love. He was furious about it, for Shakespeare did not like being captured in this way, especially by a lady for whose character he had no respect and whose personal appearance was by no means satisfactory. For it happened that she was a black-haired beauty, and as Queen Elizabeth had red hair, black hair was very unfashionable, and so the lady is known to us only as Shakespeare's Dark Lady. He was fascinated by her, but he revenged himself by writing savage sonnets, one of which is the most terrible denunciation of that sort of love in existence. And another points out all the lady's defects so mercilessly that she can hardly have been consoled by the concluding lines. And yet, by heaven, I think my love as rare as any she belied by false compare. Now, it may gratify a woman to be told, I love you, but to be told, and yet I love you, after a whole string of insults, is quite another pair of shoes. No wonder the dark lady preferred Mr. W.H., and thereby provoked a first-class quarrel between him and Shakespeare. In the play, I have assumed that the dark lady was a maid of honour at Elizabeth's court. A friend of mine, the late Thomas Tyler, discovered that one of Elizabeth's maid of honour, named Mary Fitton, got into scrapes at court by her gallantries. Well, I had to get the dark lady into Whitehall Palace somehow, so let us pretend that she was Mary Fitton. Whitehall Palace was burned long before I arrived in London, 62 years ago, but it still exists in my imagination, and the place where it stood is now right under my bedroom window. It ought to bear Shakespeare's name, but they call it Horse Guards Avenue, because all the tourists and the country folk and the provincial football fans congregate at the end of it to stare at the two mounted guardsmen in their sentry boxes and cuirasses. Not one of them ever turns round to look at the spot where the sweet swan of Avon upon banks of Thames did oft delight Eliza and our James. I wanted the National Theatre to be there, and when the government announced their intention of pulling down the old houses, which are now all government offices, with their old-fashioned grates, which make more smoke every morning when the charladies arrive than the whole city of Edinburgh, I claimed a place for Shakespeare's National Theatre there. But the government had never heard of Shakespeare. And my dream of seeing the National Theatre from my window was shattered by an assurance that when the site was filled up with the new offices, I should not be able to see anything at all. So we have had to buy a magnificent site in Kensington, which Shakespeare knew only as a far-off village. And now, I ask you to imagine the old palace still standing. You may find it hard to imagine it by daylight, but if you imagine it at 11 o'clock at night, with everybody gone to bed except the warders on duty, it will be as easy as any other dream. As I see it, the place is a terrace overlooking the river, with the Queen's apartments on one side and a gateway on the other. Now, have you got that? Right, then up goes the curtain.
Stand! Who goes there? Give the word.
Mary, I cannot. I've clean forgotten it.
Then cannot you pass here? What's your business? Who are you? Are you a true man?
Far from it, Master Warder. I'm not the same man 2 days together. Sometimes Adam, sometimes Benvolio, and anon the ghost.
The ghost? Angels are ministers of grace. Defend us!
Well said, Master Warder. With your leave, I'll set that down in writing, for I've a very poor and unhappy brain for remembrance. Angels and ministers of grace defend us. Methinks this is a good scene, with you on your lonely watch, and I approaching like a ghost in the moonlight. Stare not so amazedly at me, but mark what I say. I keep tryst here tonight with a dark lady. She promised to bribe the warder. I gave her the wherewithal, 4 tickets for the Globe Theatre.
Plague on her, she gave me 2 only.
My friend, present this tablet and you'll be welcomed at any time when the plays of Will Shakespeare are in hand. Bring your wife, bring your friends, bring the whole garrison, there's ever plenty of room.
I care not for these new-fangled plays. No man can understand a word of them. They're all talk. Will you not give me a pass for the Spanish tragedy?
To see the Spanish tragedy one pays, my friend. Here are the means.
Gold! Oh, sir, you're a better paymaster than your dark lady.
Women are thrifty, my friend.
It is so, sir. And you have to consider that the most open-handed of us must e'en cheapen that which we buy every day. This lady has to make a present to a warder nigh every night of her life.
I'll not believe it.
Now you, sir, I dare be sworn, do not have an adventure like this twice in the year.
Villain! Wouldst tell me that my dark lady hath ever done thus before, that she maketh occasions to meet other men?
Now the Lord bless your innocence, sir. Do you think you're the only pretty man in the world? A merry lady, sir. A warm bit of stuff.
How?
Go to. I'll not see her pass a deceit on a gentleman that have given me the first piece of gold I ever handled.
Master Warder, is it not a strange thing that we, knowing that all women are false, should be amazed to find our own particular drab no better than the rest?
Not all, sir. Decent bodies, many of them.
No, all false, all. If thou deny it, thou liest.
You judge too much by the court, sir. There, indeed, you may say of frailty that its name is woman.
Prithee say that again, that about frailty? The strain of music.
What strain of music, sir? I'm no musician, God knows.
There is music in your soul. Many of your degree have it very notably. Frailty, thy name is woman. Thy name is woman.
Well, sir, it's but 4 words. Are you a snapper-up of such unconsidered trifles?
Snapper-up of... Oh, immortal phrase. Snapper-up of unconsidered trifles. This man is greater than I.
You have my Lord Pembroke's trick, sir.
Well, like enough, he's my near friend. But what call you his trick?
Making sonnets by moonlight. And to the same lady, too.
No.
Last night he stood here on your errand, and in your shoes.
Thou too, Brutus, and I called him friend.
Tis ever so, sir.
Tis ever so. Twas ever so. 2 gentlemen of Verona. Judas, Judas.
Is he as bad as that, sir?
Bad?
No, no. Human, Master Warder, human. We call one another names when we're offended, as children do, that is all.
Aye, sir. Words, words, words. Mere wind, sir. We fill our bellies with the east wind, sir, as the scripture hath it. You cannot feed capons so.
A good cadence, by your leave. Cannot feed capons.
What manner of thing is a cadence, sir? I've not heard of it.
A thing to rule the world with, friend.
You speak strangely, sir. No offense. But, aunt like you, you're a very civil gentleman. And a poor man feels drawn to you, you being, as 'twere, willing to share your thought with him.
'Tis my trade. But, alas, the world, for the most part, will none of my thoughts.
Here comes your lady, sir. I'll tell her into my ward. You may e'en take your time about your business. I shall not return too suddenly, unless my sergeant comes prowling round. 'Tis a fell sergeant, sir, strict in his arrest. Good evening, sir, and good luck.
Strict in his arrest. Fell sergeant. Oh.
You will model with these cosmetics. God made you one face, and you make yourself another. think of your grave, woman. Not ever of being beautified. All the perfumes of Arabia will not whiten this Tudor hand.
All the perfumes of Arabia beautified. Beautified. A poem in a single word. Can this be my Mary? Why do you speak in a strange voice and utter poetry for the first time? Are you ailing? You walk like the dead. Mary, Mary.
Mary? Mary. Who would have thought that woman to have had so much blood in her? Is it my fault that my counselor's put deeds of blood on me? If you were women, you would have more wit than to stain the floor so foully. Hold not up a head so. Her hair is false. I tell you yet again, Mary's buried. She cannot come out of her grave. I fear her not. These cats that dare jump into thrones, though they be fit only for men's laps, must be put away. What's done cannot be undone. I'll say, fie, a queen and freckle.
Mary, I say, art asleep?
Where am I?
What art thou?
I cry your mercy. I've mistook your person all this while. Methought you were my Mary, my mistress.
Profane fellow. How do you dare?
Be not wroth with me, lady. My mistress is a marvelous, proper woman. But she does not speak as well as you. All the perfumes of Arabia. That was well said, spoken with good accent and excellent discretion.
Have I been in speech with you here?
Why, yes, fair lady. Have you forgot it?
I've walked in my sleep.
Walk ever in your sleep, fair one, for then your words drop like honey.
Know you to whom you speak, sir? That you dare express yourself so saucily?
Not I, nor care neither. You're some lady of the court, belike. To me there are but two sorts of women, those with excellent voices, sweet and low, and cackling hens that cannot make me dream. Your voice has all manner of loveliness in it. Grudge me not a short hour of its music.
Sir, you are overbold. Season your admiration for a while
Wait. Season your admiration for a while
with... Hello. Do you dare mimic me to my face?
It is music. Can you not hear? When a good musician sings a song, do you not sing it and sing it again till you have caught and fixed its perfect melody? Season your admiration for a while. God, the history of man's heart is in that one word, admiration. Admiration. Where are my tablets? Here. What was it? Suspend your admiration for a space...
A very vile jingle of S's. I said season,
season,
your...
Season. Plague on my memory, my wretched memory. I must e'en write it down. You tell me which was the vile jingle. You said very justly, mine only accorded even as my false tongue said it.
You said for a space. I said for a while.
For a while. For a while. Good. And now be mine neither for a space nor a while, but forever.
Out, my life. Are you by chance making love to me, knave?
Nay, it is you who have made the love. I but pour it out at your feet. I cannot but love a lass that sets such store by an apt word. Therefore, vouchsafe divine perfection of a woman. Oh, no, I've said that before somewhere. And the wordy garment of my love for you must be fire new.
You talk too much, sir. Let me warn you. I am more accustomed to be listened to. Then preach that.
The most are like that do talk well. But though you speak with the tongues of angels, as indeed you do, yet know that I am the king of words.
A king?
No less. We are poor things, we men and women.
Dare you call me woman?
What nobler name can I tender you? How else can I love you?
Yet you may well shrink from the name. Have I not said we are but poor things? Yet there is a power that can redeem us.
Gramercy for your sermon, sir. I hope I know my duty.
This is no sermon, but the living truth. The power I speak of is the power of immortal poesy. For know that, vile as this world is and worms as we are, you have but to invest all this vileness with a magical garment of words to transfigure us and uplift our souls till earth flowers into a million heavens.
You spoil your heaven with your million. You are extravagant. Observe some measure in your speech.
You speak now as Ben does.
And who, pray, is Ben?
A learned bricklayer who thinks that the sky is at the top of his ladder, and so takes it on him to rebuke me for flying. I tell you, there is no word yet coined and no melody yet sung that is extravagant and majestical enough for the glory that lovely words can reveal. It is heresy to deny it. Have you not been taught that in the beginning was the Word? That the Word was with God? Nay, that the Word was God.
Beware, fellow. How you presume to speak of holy things. The Queen is head of the church.
You are the head of my church when you speak as you did at first. All the perfumes of Arabia. Can the Queen speak thus? They say she playeth well upon the virginals. Well, let her play so to me, and I'll kiss her hands. But until then, you are my Queen. And I'll kiss those lips that have dropped music on my heart.
Unmeasured impudence! On your life! Take your hands from me!
Then cease to make my hands tremble with the streams of life you pour through them. You hold me as the lodestar holds the iron. I cannot but cling to you. We are lost, you and I. Nothing can separate us now.
We shall see that horse lying hung, you and your filthy trowel!
Oh!
Shake that, both of you!
High treason!
Will, I am lost. I have struck the Queen!
Woman! You have struck William Shakespeare!
Marry, clamour! Struck William Shakespeare, quoth I. And who in the name of all the sluts and jades and lighter loves and fly-by-nights that infest this palace of mine may William Shakespeare be?
Madam, he is but a player. Oh, I could have my hand cut off.
Belike you will, mistress. Have you bethought you that I am like to have your head cut off as well?
Will, save me! Oh, save me!
Save you, huh? A likely saviour, my royal word. I had thought this fellow at least an esquire, but I had hoped that even the vilest of my ladies would not have dishonoured my court by wantoning with a base-born servant.
Base-born? I, a Shakespeare of Stratford? I, whose mother was an Arden, base-born? You forget yourself, madam.
Blood do I so. I will teach
Will.
You.
Will, in God's name, anger her no further at his death. Madam, do not listen to him.
Not were it e'en to save your life, Mary, not to mention mine own, will I flatter a monarch who forgets what is due to my family. I deny not that my father was brought down to be a poor bankrupt, but 'twas his gentle blood that was ever too generous for trade. Never did he disown his debts. 'Tis true he paid them not, but it is an attested truth that he gave bills for them, and 'twas those bills in the hands of base hucksters that were his undoing.
The son of your father shall learn his place in the presence of the daughter of Harry the Eighth.
Name not that inordinate man in the same breath with Stratford's worthiest alderman. John Shakespeare wedded but once. Harry Tudor was married 6 times. You should blush to utter his name.
Insolent!
How know you? How know you that King Harry was indeed your
Zounds!
Father?
No, by...
Learn to know yourself better, madam. I am an honest gentleman of unquestioned parentage, and have already sent in my demand for the coat of arms that is lawfully mine. Can you say as much for yourself?
Another word, and I begin with mine own hands the work that hangman shall finish.
You are no true Tudor. This baggage here has as good a right to your royal seat as you. What maintains you on the throne of England? Is it your renowned wit? Your wisdom that sets at naught the craftiest statesman of the Christian world? No! It is the mere chance that might have happened to any milkmaid. The caprice of nature that made you the most wondrous piece of beauty the age hath seen.
That is what has brought all men to your feet and founded your throne on the impregnable rock of your proud heart. A stony island in a sea of desire. There, madam, is some wholesome, blunt, honest speaking for you. Now do your worst.
Master Shakespeare, it is well for you that I am a merciful prince. I make allowance for your rustic ignorance. But remember that there are things which be true, and are yet not seemly to be said, I will not say to a queen, for you will have it that I am none, but to a virgin.
It is no fault of mine that you are a virgin, madam, albeit it is my misfortune.
Oh, mercy, madam, hold no further discourse with him. He hath ever some new jest on his tongue. You heard how he useth me, calling me baggage and the like to your majesty's face.
As for you, mistress, I have yet to demand what your business is at this hour and this place, and how you come to be so concerned with a player that you strike blindly at your sovereign in your jealousy of him.
Oh, madam, as I live and hope for salvation. I am as like to be saved as thou that believest naught, save some black magic of words and verses. I say, madam, as I am a living woman, I came here to break with him forever. Oh, madam, if you would know what misery is, listen to this man that is more than man and less at the same time. He will tie you down to anatomize your very soul. He will wring tears of blood from your humiliation, and then he will heal the wound with flatteries that no woman can resist.
Flatteries? Oh, madam, I put my case at your royal feet. I confess too much. I have a rude tongue. I am unmannerly. I blaspheme against the holiness of anointed royalty, but, oh, my royal mistress, am I a flatterer?
I'll absolve you as to that. You are far too plain a dealer to please me.
Madam, he is flattering you even as he speaks.
Ah, is it so?
Madam, she's jealous. And heaven help me, not without reason. Oh, you say you're a merciful prince, but that was cruel of you, that hiding of your royal dignity when you found me here. Well, how can I ever be content with this black-haired, black-eyed, black-of-eyes devil again now that I have looked upon real beauty and real majesty?
He hath swore to me 10 times over that the day shall come in England when black women, for all their foulness, shall be more thought of than fair ones.
Oh, why?
Deny it if thou canst. Oh, he is compact of lies and scorns. I am tired of being tossed up to heaven and dragged down to hell at every whim that takes him. I am ashamed to my very soul that I have abased myself to love one that my father would not have been fit to hold my stirrup, one that will talk to all the world about me. That will put my love and my shame into his plays. Make me blush for myself there. That will write sonnets about me. That no man of gentle strain would put his hand to. Oh, I'm all disordered. I know not what I am saying to your majesty. I am of all ladies most dejected and wretched.
Ah! At last, sorrow hath struck a note of music out of thee. Of all ladies most deject and wretched.
Of all ladies most deject and wretched, most deject and wretched.
Madam, I implore you give me leave to go. I am distracted with grief and shame.
Go.
Oh,
madam. No more. Go.
You have been cruel to that poor, fond wretch, Master Shakespeare.
I am not cruel, madam. But you know the fable of Jupiter and Semele. I could not help my lightning scorching her.
You have an overweening conceit of yourself, sir, that displeases your queen.
Oh, madam, can I go about with the modest cough of a minor poet, belittling my inspiration and making the mightiest wonder of your reign a thing of naught? I have said that not marble nor the gilded monuments of princes shall outlive the words with which I make the world glorious or foolish at my will. Besides, I would have you think me great enough to grant me a boon.
I hope it is a boon that may be asked of a virgin queen without offence, sir. I mistrust your forwardness.
Oh, madam.
And I bid you remember that I do not suffer persons of your degree, if I may say so without offence to your father, the alderman, to presume too far.
Oh, madam, I shall not forget myself again.
Oh, by my life, could I make you a serving wench? Neither a queen nor a virgin should you be for so much longer as a flash of lightning might take to cross the river to the bank side. But since you are a queen and will none of me, nor of Philip of Spain, nor of any other mortal man, I must e'en contain myself as best I may and ask you only for a boon of state.
A boon of state already? You are becoming a courtier like the rest of them. You lack advancement.
Lack advancement? By your Majesty's leave, a queenly phrase. My tables meet it as I set it down.
Your tables begin to anger me, sir. I'm not here to write your plays for you.
You are here to inspire them, madam. For this, among the rest, were you ordained. But the boon I crave is that you do endow a great playhouse, or, if I may make bold to coin a scholarly name for it, a national theatre, for the better instruction and gracing of your Majesty's subjects.
Why, sir, are there not enough theatres now on the Bankside and in Blackfriars?
Madam, these are the adventures of needy and desperate men that must, to save themselves from perishing of want, give the sillier sort of people what they best like. And what they best like, God knows, is not their own betterment and instruction, as we well see by the example of the churches, which must needs compel men to frequent them, though they be open to all without charge. Only when there is a matter of a murder, or a plot, or a pretty youth in petticoats, or some naughty tale of wantonness, will your subjects pay the great cost of good players and their finery, with a little profit to boot. To prove this, I will tell you that I have written two noble and excellent plays, setting forth the advancement of women of high nature and fruitful industry, even as your Majesty is. The one a skillful physician, the other a sister devoted to good works. I have also stole from a book of idle wanton tales two of the most damnable foolishnesses in the world. In the one of which a woman goeth in man's attire and maketh impudent love to her swain, who pleaseth the groundlings by overthrowing a wrestler, whilst in the other one of the same kidney showeth her wit by saying endless naughtinesses to a gentleman as lewd as herself. I have writ these to save my friends from penury, yet showing my scorn for such follies and for them that praise them, by calling the one As You Like It, meaning that it is not as I like it, and the other Much Ado About Nothing, as it truly is. And now these two filthy pieces drive their nobler fellows from the stage, where indeed I cannot have my lady physician presented at all, she being too honest a woman for the taste of the town. Wherefore I humbly beg your Majesty to give order that a theatre be endowed out of the public revenue for the playing of those pieces of mine which no merchant will touch, seeing that his gain is so much greater with the worse than with the better. Thereby you shall also encourage other men to undertake the writing of plays who do now despise it, and leave it wholly to those whose counsels will work little good to your realm. For this writing of plays is a great matter, forming as it does the minds and affections of men in such sort that whatsoever they see done in show on the stage, they will presently be doing in earnest in the world, which is but a larger stage. Of late, as you know, the church taught the people by means of plays, but the people flocked only to such as were full of superstitious miracles and bloody martyrdoms, and so the church, which also was just then brought into straits by the policy of your royal father, did abandon and discountenance the art of playing. And thus it fell into the hands of poor players and greedy merchants that had their pockets to look to, and not the greatness of this your kingdom. Therefore now must your Majesty take up that good work that your church hath abandoned, and restore the art of playing to its former use and dignity.
Master Shakespeare, I would speak of this matter to the Lord Treasurer.
Then am I undone, madam, for there never was yet a Lord Treasurer that could find a penny for anything over and above the necessary expenses of your government, save for a war or a salary for his own nephew.
Master Shakespeare, you speak so. Yet cannot I in any wise mend it. I dare not offend my unruly Puritans by making so lewd a place as the playhouse a public charge. And there be a thousand things to be done in this London of mine before your poetry can have its penny from the general purse. I tell thee, Master Will, it will be 300 years and more before my subjects learn that man cannot live by bread alone,
but by every word that cometh from the mouth of those whom God inspires. By that time you and I will be thus beneath the feet of the horses, if indeed there be any horses then, and men be still riding instead of flying. Now, it may be that by then your works will be dust also.
They will stand, madam, fear not for that.
It may prove so. But of this I am certain, for I know my countrymen, that until every other country in the Christian world, even to barbarian Muscovy and the hamlets of the boorish Germans, have its playhouse at the public charge, England will never adventure. And she will adventure then only because it is her desire to be ever in the fashion and to do humbly and dutifully whatsoever she seeth everybody else doing. In the meantime, you must content yourself as best you can by the playing of those two pieces which you give out as the most damnable ever writ, but which your countrymen, I warn you, will swear the best you have ever done. But this I will say, that if I could speak across the ages to our descendants, I should heartily recommend them to fulfil your wish. For the Scottish minstrel hath well said that he that maketh the songs of a nation is mightier than he that maketh its laws. And the same may well be true of plays and interludes. And now, sir, we are upon the hour when it better beseems a virgin queen to be abed than to converse alone with the naughtiest of her subjects. Ho there! Who keeps ward on the Queen's lodgings tonight?
I do, and please your Majesty.
See that you keep it better in future. You have let pass a most dangerous gallant even to the very door of our royal chamber. Lead him forth, and bring me word when he is safely locked out. For I shall scarce dare disrobe until the palace gates are between us.
My body goes through the gate into the darkness, madam, but my thoughts follow you.
How? To my bed?
No, madam, to your prayers, in which I beg you to remember my theater.
That is my prayer to posterity. Forget not your own to God. And so, good night, Master Will.
Good night, great Elizabeth.
God save the Queen.
Amen.